for your reputation. The less you tell them, the more everyone will be wanting to get from you. I'll keep close about myself, Your Grace, but I would have better luck avoiding the subject of why I'm here if I knew what it was. Alvaran's expression went sly. True, but this is too public a place. You've shown good patience so far. Exercise it a while longer. He looked up at me. Would you be so kind as to walk me to my rooms? I held out my arm. Certainly, Your Grace. After returning to my rooms, I removed my embroidered jacket and hung it in the carved rosewood wardrobe. The huge piece of furniture was lined with cedar and sandalwood, scenting the air. Large, flawless mirrors hung on the insides of the doors. I walked across the polished marble floor and sat on a red velvet lounging couch. I idly wondered how exactly one was supposed to lounge. I couldn't remember ever doing it myself. After a moment's consideration, I decided lounging was probably similar to relaxing, but with more money in your pocket. Restless, I got to my feet and moved around the room. There were paintings on the walls, portraits, and pastoral scenes done skillfully in oil. One wall held a huge tapestry that showed a vast naval battle in intricate detail. That occupied my attention for almost half an hour. I missed my lute. It had been terribly hard to pawn it, like cutting off my hand. I'd fully expected to spend the next 10 days sick with worry, anxious that I wouldn't be able to buy it back. But without meaning to, the mayor himself had set my mind at ease. In my wardrobe hung 6 suits of clothing, fine enough for any lord. When they had been delivered to my room, I'd felt myself relax. My first thought on seeing them wasn't that I could now mingle comfortably with the court society. I thought that if worse came to worst, I could steal them, sell them to a fripperer, and easily have enough money to reclaim my loot. Of course, if I did such a thing, I would burn all my bridges with the mayor. It would render my entire trip to Severin pointless and would embarrass Threp so profoundly that he might never speak to me again. Nevertheless, knowing I had that option gave me a thin thread of control over the situation. It was enough so I could keep from going absolutely mad with worry. I missed my loot, but if I could gain the mayor's patronage, my life's road would grow suddenly smooth and straight. The mayor had money enough for me to continue my education at the university. His connections could help me continue my research into the Emir. Perhaps most important was the power of his name. If the mayor were my patron, I would be under his protection. Ambrose's father might be the most powerful baron in all of Ventus, 12 steps from royalty. But Alvaran was practically a king in his own right. How much simpler would my life become without Ambrose endlessly spiking my wheel? It was a giddy thought. I missed my loot. But all things have their price. For a chance of having the mayor as a patron, I was willing to grit my teeth and spend a span bored and anxious without music. Alvaran turned out to be right about the curious nature of his attendant court. After he called me to his study that evening, rumor exploded like a brush fire around me. I could understand why the mayor enjoyed this sort of thing. It was like watching stories being born. Chapter 56. Power. Alvaran sent for me again the next day, and soon the two of us were strolling along the garden paths again, his hand resting lightly on my arm. "Let's head toward the south side," the mayor pointed with his walking stick. "I hear the cellars will reach full bloom soon." We took the left turning of the path, and he drew a breath. "There are 2 types of power, inherent and granted," Alvaran said, letting me know the topic of today's conversation. "Inherent power you possess as a part of yourself. Granted power is lent or given by other people." He looked sideways at me. I nodded. Seeing my agreement, the mayor continued. "Inherent power is an obvious thing. Strength of body." He patted my supporting arm. "Strength of mind. Strength of personality. All these things lie within a person. They define us. They determine our limits. Not entirely, Your Grace, I protested gently. A man can always improve himself. They limit us, the mayor said firmly. A man with one hand will never wrestle in the roundings. A man with one leg will never run as quickly as a man with two. An Adem warrior with only one hand might be more deadly than a common warrior with two, Your Grace, I pointed out, despite his deficiency. True, true, the mayor said crossly. We can improve ourselves, exercise our bodies, educate our minds, groom ourselves carefully. He ran a hand down his immaculate salt-and-pepper beard. For even appearance is a type of power, but there are always limits. While a one-handed man might become a passable warrior, he could not play a lute. I nodded slowly. You make a good point, Your Grace. Our power has limits we can extend, but not indefinitely. Alvaron held up a finger. But that is only the first type of power. We are only limited if we rely upon the power we ourselves possess. There is still the type of power that is given. Do you understand what I mean by granted power? I thought a moment. Taxes? The mayor said, surprised. That's a rather good example, actually. Have you put much thought into this sort of thing before? A bit, I admitted, but never in these terms. It is a difficult thing, he said, sounding pleased by my response. Which do you think is the greater type of power? I only had to think for a second. The inherent, Your Grace. Interesting. Why do you say that? Because a power you possess yourself cannot be taken away, Your Grace. Ah, he raised a long finger as if to caution me. But we've already agreed that type of power is severely limited. Granted power has no limits. No limits, Your Grace? Alvaron nodded his head in concession. Very few limits, then. I still didn't agree. The mayor must have seen it on my face, because he leaned toward me to explain. Let's say I have an enemy, young and strong. Let's say he has stolen something of mine, some money. Are you with me? I nodded. No manner of training will make me the match of a quarrelsome 20-year-old. So what do? I get one of my young, strong friends to go and box his ears. With that strength, I can accomplish a feat which would be otherwise impossible. Your enemy could box your friend's ears instead, I pointed out as we rounded a corner. An arching trellis turned the path ahead of us into a shaded tunnel, thick with deep green leaves. Let's say I got three friends together, the mayor amended. Suddenly, I've been granted the strength of three men. My enemy, even if he were very strong, could never be as strong as that. Look to the cellars. Terribly difficult to cultivate, they tell me. We entered the shadow of the trellis tunnel, where hundreds of deep red petals blossomed in the shade of leaf and arch. The smell was sweet and tremulous. I brushed a hand across one of the deep red blooms. It was unspeakably soft. I thought of Denna. The mayor returned to our discussion. You're missing the point, anyway. The lending of strength is just a small example. Some types of power can only be given. He made a subtle gesture to a corner of the garden. Do you see Comte Farland over there? If you asked him about his title, he would say he possesses it. He would claim it is a part of him as much as his own blood. A part of his blood, in fact. Almost any noble would say the same thing. They would argue their lineage imbued them with the right to rule. The mayor looked up at me, his eyes glittering in amusement. But they're wrong. It is not inherent power. It is granted. I could take away his lands and leave him a pauper on the street. Alvaron motioned me closer, and I leaned a bit. Here is a great secret. Even my title, my riches, my control over people and the land, it is only granted power. It belongs to me no more than does the strength of your arm. He patted my hand and smiled at me. But I know the difference, and that is why I am always in control." He straightened and spoke in normal tones.
"Good afternoon, Comte. Lovely day to be out in the sun, wouldn't you say?"
"Indeed, Your Grace. The cellars are quite breathtaking."
The Comte was a heavy man with jowls and a thick mustache.
"My compliments."
After the Comte had passed us by, Alvaran continued. "You notice he complimented me on the cellars. I have never touched a trowel in my life." He looked sideways at me, his expression slightly smug. "Do you still think inherent power is the better of the two?"
"You make a compelling point, Your Grace," I said. "However, you're a hard one to convince."
"One last example, then. Can we agree that I will never be able to give birth to a child?"
"I think that is safe to say, Your Grace."
"Yet, if a woman grants me the right to wed her, I can give birth to a son. Through granted power, a man can make himself as fast as a horse, as strong as an ox. Can inherent power do this for you?"
I couldn't argue that.
"I bow to your argument, Your Grace."
"I bow to your wisdom in accepting it."
He chuckled, and at the same time the faint ringing of the hour moved through the garden.
"Oh, bother," the mayor said, his expression souring. "I must go take that dreadful nostrum of mine, or Codicus will be completely unmanageable for a span of days."
I gave him a quizzical look, and he explained.
"He somehow discovered that I poured yesterday's dose in the chamber pot."
"Your Grace should be mindful of your health."
Alvaran scowled. "You overstep yourself," he snapped.
I flushed in embarrassment, but before I could apologize, he waved me into silence.
"You're right, of course. I know my duty, but you sound just like him. One Codicus is enough for me."
He paused to nod toward an approaching couple. The man was tall and handsome, a few years older than myself. The woman was perhaps 30, with dark eyes and an elegant, wicked mouth.
"Good evening, Lady Hesua.
I trust your father is continuing to improve."
"Oh, yes," she said. "The surgeon says he should be up before the span is through."
She caught my eye and held it briefly, her red mouth curving into a knowing smile. Then she was past us. I found myself sweating a bit. If the mayor noticed, he ignored it. Terrible woman. New man every span of days. Her father was wounded in a duel with Esquire Higton over an inappropriate remark. A true remark, but that doesn't count for much once the swords are out.
"What of the squire?"
"Died the day after. Pity, too. He was a good man, just didn't know enough to mind his tongue." He sighed and looked up at the belling tower.
"As I was saying, one physician is quite enough for me. Codicus clucks over me like a mother hen. I hate taking medicine when I'm already on the mend."
The mayor did seem better today. He hadn't really needed the support of my arm during our walk. I sensed he only leaned on me to give us an excuse to be talking so close together.
"Your improving health seems proof enough that his ministrations work to heal you," I said.
"Yes, yes. His potives drive away my illness for a span of days, sometimes for months." He sighed bitterly. "But they always come back. Shall I be drinking potions the rest of my life?"
"Perhaps the need for them will pass, Your Grace."
"I had hoped the same thing. In his recent travels, Codicus gathered some herbs that worked wondrous well. His last treatment left me hale for nearly a year. I thought I was finally free of it."
The mayor scowled down at his walking stick.
"Yet here I am."
"If I could aid you in any way, Your Grace, I would."
Alvaran turned his head to look me in the eye. After a moment, he nodded to himself.
"I do believe you would," he said. "How extraordinary."
Several conversations of a similar sort followed. I could tell the mayor was trying to get a feel for me.
With all the skill learned in 40 years of courtly intrigue, he steered the conversation in subtle ways, learning my opinions, determining whether or not I was worthy of his trust. While I didn't have the mayor's experience, I was a fair conversationalist myself. I was always careful with my answers, always courteous. After a few days, a mutual respect began to grow between us. Not a friendship such as I had with Count Threp. The mayor never encouraged me to disregard his title or sit in his presence, but we were growing closer. While Threp was a friend, the mayor was like a distant grandfather, kind but older, serious, and reserved. I got the impression the mayor was a lonely man, forced to remain aloof from his subjects and the members of his court. I almost suspected he might have sent to Threp for a companion, someone clever but removed from the politics of court so he could have an honest conversation once in a while. At first, I dismissed such an idea as unlikely, but the days continued to pass and still the mayor avoided any mention of what use he planned to put me to. If I'd had my loot, I could have passed the time pleasantly, but it still lay in Severin Low, 7 days away from belonging to the pawn shop. So there was no music, just my echoing rooms and my damnable useless idleness. As rumors about me spread, various members of the court came to visit. Some made a pretense of welcoming me. Others made a show of wanting to gossip. I even suspected there were a few attempts at seduction, but at that point in my life I knew so little of women that I was immune to those games. One gentleman even tried to borrow money from me, and I was hard-pressed not to laugh in his face. They told different stories and used different degrees of subtlety, but they were all there for the same reason, to glean information from me. However, since I was under the mayor's instructions to be tight-lipped about myself, all the conversations were brief and unsatisfying. All but one, I should say. The exception proves the rule. Chapter 57. A Handful of Iron. I met Braden on my 4th day in Severin. It was early, but I was already pacing my rooms, nearly insane with boredom. I'd had my breakfast, and it was hours before lunch. So far today, I dealt with 3 courtiers come to pry at me. I dealt with them deftly, running our conversations aground at every opportunity. "So where are you from, my boy?" "Oh, you know how it is. One travels so." "And your parents?" "Yes, actually, I had them. 2, in fact." "What brings you to Severin?" "A 4, for the most part, though I walked a bit as well. Good for the lungs, you know." "And what are you doing here?" "Enjoying good conversation, of course, meeting interesting people."
"Really? Who?"
"Why, all sorts, including you, Lord Pravik. You are quite the fascinating fellow." And so on. It wasn't long before even the most tenacious rumor-monger grew weary and left. Worst of all, these brief exchanges would be the most interesting part of my day if the mayor didn't call for me. So far, we'd conversed over a light lunch, 3 times during brief walks in the garden, and once late at night when most sensible people would be abed. 2 times, Alvaron's runner woke me from a sound sleep before the sky began to color with the blue beginning of dawn's light. I know when I'm being tested. Alvaron wanted to see if I was truly willing to make myself available to him at any unreasonable hour of the day or night. He was watching to see if I would become impatient or irritated by his casual use of me. So, I played the game. I was charming and unfailingly polite. I came when he called and left as soon as he was through with me. I asked no impertinent questions, made no demands on him, and spent the remainder of my day grinding my teeth, pacing my overlarge rooms, and trying not to think about how many days I had left before the span note on my loot expired. Small wonder that a knock on that 4th day sent me scrambling for the door. I hoped it was a summons from the mayor, but at this point, any distraction would be welcome. I opened the door to reveal an older man, a gentleman down to his bones. His clothes gave him away, certainly, but more important was the fact that he wore his wealth with the comfortable indifference of someone born into it. New-made nobles, pretenders, and rich merchants simply don't carry themselves the same way. Elveron's manservant, for example, had finer clothes than half the gentry, but despite the self-assurance Stapes possessed, he looked like a baker wearing his holiday best. Thanks to Elveron's tailors, I was dressed as well as anyone. The colors were good on me, leaf green, black, and burgundy, with silver workings on the cuff and collar. However, unlike Stapes, I wore the clothes with the casual ease of nobility. True, the brocade itched. True, the buttons, buckles, and endless layers made every outfit stiff and awkward as a suit of mercenaries' leathers. But I lounged in it as easily as if it were a second skin. It was a costume, you see, and I played my part as only a trooper can. As I was saying, I opened the door to see an older gentleman standing in the hall.
"So, your Quoth, are you?"
he asked. I nodded, caught slightly off my stride. The custom in Northern Vintus was to send a servant ahead to request a meeting. The runner brought a note and a ring with the noble's name inscribed. You sent a gold ring to request a meeting with a noble of higher rank than yourself, silver for someone of roughly the same rank, and iron for someone beneath you. I didn't have any rank, of course. No title, no lands, no family, and no blood. I was low-born as they come, but no one here knew that. Everyone assumed the mysterious red-haired man spending time with Elveron was some flavor of nobility, and my origin and standing was a much-debated topic. The important thing was that I had not been officially introduced to the court. As such, I had no official ranking. That meant all the rings sent to me were iron, and one does not typically refuse a request sent with an iron ring, lest one offend one's betters. So it was rather surprising to find this older gentleman standing outside the door, obviously noble, but unannounced and uninvited.
"You may call me Braden," he said, looking me in the eye. "Do you know how to play tack?"
I shook my head, unsure what to make of this. He gave a small, disappointed sigh.
"Ah, well, I can teach you."
He thrust a black velvet sack toward me, and I took hold of it with both hands. It felt as if it were full of small, smooth stones. Braden gestured behind him, and a pair of young men bustled into my room carrying a small table. I stepped out of their way, and Braden swept through the door in their wake.
"Set it by the window," he directed them, pointing with his walking stick, "and bring some chairs. No, the railback chairs."
In a short moment, everything was arranged to his satisfaction. The two servants left, and Braden turned to me with an apologetic look on his face.
"You'll forgive an old man a dramatic entrance, I hope."
"Of course," I said graciously. "Please, have a seat." I gestured toward the new table by the window.
"Such aplomb,"
he chuckled, leaning his walking stick against the windowsill. The sunlight caught on the polished silver handle wrought in the shape of a snarling wolf's head. Braden was older, not elderly by any means, but what I consider grandfather old. His colors weren't colors at all, merely ash gray and a dark charcoal. His hair and beard were pure white and all cut to the same length, making a frame for his face. As he sat there peering at me with his lively brown eyes, he reminded me of an owl. I took a seat across from him and wondered idly how he was going to attempt to wheedle information out of me. He'd obviously brought a game. Perhaps he'd try to gamble it out of me. That would be a new approach, at least. He smiled at me, an honest smile I found myself returning before I realized what I was doing.
"You must have a fair collection of rings by this point," he said.
I nodded. He leaned forward curiously.
"Would you mind terribly if I looked them over?"
"Not at all." I went into the other room and brought back a handful of rings, spilling them onto the table. He looked them over, nodding to himself.
"You've had all our best gossipmongers descend on you. Veston, Pravik, and Temenlovy have all taken a crack."
His eyebrows went up as he saw the name on another ring.
"Pravik twice, and none of them got a shred of anything out of you. Nothing half as solid as a whisper."
Braden glanced up at me.
That tells me you are keeping your tongue tightly between your teeth, and you are good at it. Rest assured, I'm not here in some vain attempt to pry at your secrets.
I didn't entirely believe him, but it was nice to hear.
I'll admit that's a relief.
As a brief aside, he mentioned casually, I'll mention the rings are traditionally left in the sitting room near the door. They are displayed as a mark of status.
I hadn't known that, but I didn't want to admit to it. If I was unfamiliar with the customs of the local court, it would let him know I was either a foreigner or not one of the gentry.
There's no real status in a handful of iron, I said dismissively. Count Threp had explained the basics of the rings to me before I left Imre, but he wasn't from Ventus and obviously hadn't known the fine points.
There's some truth to that, Brayden said easily. But not the truth entire. Gold rings imply those below you are working to curry your favor. Silver indicates a healthy working relationship with your peers.
He laid the rings in a row on the table.
However, iron means you have the attention of your betters. It indicates you are desirable.
I nodded slowly.
Of course, I said. Any ring the mayor sends will be an iron one.
Exactly, Brayden nodded. To have a ring from the mayor is a mark of great favor.
He pushed the rings toward me across the top of the smooth marble table.
But there is no such ring here, and that itself is meaningful.
It seems you're no stranger to courtly politics yourself, I pointed out. Brayden closed his eyes and nodded a weary agreement.
I was quite fond of it when I was young. I was even something of a power as these things go. But at present, I have no machinations to advance. That takes the spice from such maneuverings.
He looked at me again, meeting my eyes directly.
I have simpler tastes now. I travel. I enjoy wines and conversation with interesting people. I've even been learning how to dance.
He smiled again, warmly, and rapped a knuckle on the board.
More than anything, however, I enjoy playing tack. However, I know few people with time or wit enough to play the game properly.
He raised an eyebrow at me. I hesitated.
One might assume that someone well skilled in the subtle art of conversation could use long stretches of idle chatter to glean information from an unsuspecting victim.
Brayden smiled.
By the names on these rings, I can tell you've seen nothing but the most gaudy and grasping of us. You're understandably skittish regarding your secrets, whatever they may be.
He leaned forward.
Consider this instead. Those who have approached you are like magpies. They caw and flap around you, hoping to snatch something bright to carry home with them.
He rolled his eyes disdainfully.
What gain is there in that? Some small notoriety, I suppose. Some brief elevation among one's gaudy, gossipy peers.
Brayden ran a hand over his white beard.
I am no magpie. I need nothing shiny, nor do I care what gossipmongers think. I play a longer, more subtle game.
He began to work the drawstring loose on the black velvet bag.
You are a man of some wit. I know this, as the mayor does not waste his time with fools. I know you either stand in the mayor's good grace, or you have a chance to gain that grace. So, here is my plan.
He smiled his warm smile again.
Would you like to hear my plan?
I found myself smiling back without meaning to, as I had before.
That would be unusually kind of you.
My plan is to insinuate myself into your favor now. I will make myself useful and entertaining. I will provide conversation and a way to pass the time.
He spilled a set of round stones out onto the marble tabletop.
Then, when your star grows ascendant in the mayor's sky, I may find myself in possession of an unexpectedly useful friend.
He began to sort the stones into their different colors.
And, should your star fail to rise, I am still richer by several games of tack.
I also imagine it won't hurt your reputation to spend several hours alone with me, I mentioned. Given that all my other conversations have been barren things not likely to last a quarter hour.
There is some truth to that as well, he said, as he began to arrange the stones.
His curious brown eyes smiled at me again.
Oh, yes. I think I'm going to have quite a bit of fun playing with you.
My next several hours were spent learning how to play tack. Even if I had not been nearly mad with idleness, I would have enjoyed it. Tack is the best sort of game. Simple in its rules, complex in its strategy. Braden beat me handily in all five games we played, but I am proud to say that he never beat me the same way twice. After the fifth game, he leaned back with a satisfied sigh.
That was approaching a good game. You got clever in the corner here.
He wiggled his fingers at the edge of the board. Not clever enough.
Clever nonetheless. What you attempted is called a Brooker's Fall, just so you know.
And what's the name for the way you got away from it?
I call it Braden's Defense, he said, smiling rakishly. But that's what I call any maneuver when I get out of a tight corner by being uncommonly clever.
I laughed and began to separate the stones again.
Another?
Braden sighed.
Alas, I have an unavoidable appointment. I needn't hurry out the door, but I don't have enough time for another game. Not a proper one.
His brown eyes looked me over as he began to gather the stones into the velvet bag.
I won't insult you by asking if you're familiar with the local customs, Braden said. However, I thought I might give a few general pieces of advice, on the off chance they might be helpful.
He smiled at me.
It would be best to listen, of course. If you refuse, you reveal your knowledge of these things.
Of course, I said with a straight face. Braden slid open the table's drawer and pulled out the handful of iron rings we had swept aside to clear the board for our game.
The presentation of the rings implies a great deal. If they are jumbled in a bowl, for example, it implies disinterest in the social aspects of the court.
He arranged the rings with their engraved names facing me.
Laid out in careful display, they show you are proud of your connections.
He looked up and smiled.
Either way, a new arrival is usually left alone in the sitting room on some pretext. This gives them a chance to paw through your collection in order to satisfy their curiosity.
Shrugging, Braden pushed the rings toward me.
You have, of course, always made a point of offering to return the rings to their owners.
He was careful not to make it into a question.
Of course, I said honestly. Threp had known that much. It is the most polite thing to do.
He looked up at me, his brown eyes peering owlishly from the halo of his white hair and beard.
Have you worn any of them in public?
I held up my bare hands.
Wearing a ring can indicate a debt, or that you are attempting to curry favor.
He looked at me.
If the mayor ever declines to take his ring back from you, it would be an indication he was willing to make your connection somewhat more formal.
And not wearing the ring would be viewed as a slight, I said. Braden smiled.
Perhaps. It is one thing to display a ring in your sitting room, quite another to display it on your hand. Wearing the ring of one's better can be viewed as quite presumptuous. Also, if you wore another noble's ring while visiting the mayor, he might take it amiss, as if someone had poached you from his forest.
He leaned back in his chair.
I mention these things as general talking points, he said. Suspecting this information is already well known to you, and you are politely letting an old man ramble.
Perhaps I'm still reeling from a series of numbing defeats at tack, I said. He waved my comment away, and I noticed he wore no rings of any sort on his fingers.
You took to it quickly, like a baron at a brothel, as they say. I expect you'll prove a decent challenge after a month or so.
Wait and see, I said. I'll beat you the next time we play. Braden chuckled.
I like to hear that.
He reached into his pocket and pulled out a smaller velvet bag.
I have also brought you a small gift.
I couldn't possibly, I said reflexively. You've already provided me with an afternoon's entertainment.
Please, he said, pushing the bag across the table. I must insist. These are yours without obligation, let, or lien. A freely given gift.
I upended the bag and three rings chimed into my palm. Gold, silver, and iron. Each of them had my name etched into the metal. Kvothe.
I heard a rumor your luggage was lost, Braden said, and thought these might prove useful.
He smiled.
Especially if you desire another game of tack.
I rolled the rings around in my hand, idly wondering if the gold ring was solid or simply plated. And what ring would I send my new acquaintance if I desired his company?
Well, Braden said slowly, that is complicated. By my rash and unseemingly barging into your rooms, I have neglected a proper introduction and failed to inform you as to my title and rank.
His brown eyes looked into mine seriously. And it would be terribly rude of me to inquire about such things, I said slowly, not quite sure what he was playing at. He nodded.
So for now, you must assume I am without either title or rank. That puts us on a curious footing, you unannounced to the court, and myself unannounced to you. As such, it would be fitting for you to send me a silver ring if, in the future, you would like to share a lunch or graciously lose another game of tack.
I rolled the silver ring around in my fingers. If I sent it to him, rumor would get around that I was claiming a rank roughly equal to his, and I had no idea what rank that was.
What will people say?
His eyes danced a bit.
What indeed?
So the days continued to pass. The mayor summoned me for urbane chatter. Magpie nobles sent their cards and rings and were met with polite conversational rebuffment. Braden alone kept me from growing mad with caged boredom. The next day I sent him my new silver ring with a card saying, At your leisure, my rooms. 5 minutes later, he arrived with his tack table and bag of stones. He offered my ring back to me, and I accepted it as graciously as possible. I wouldn't have minded him keeping it, but as he knew, I only had the one. Our fifth game was interrupted when I was summoned by the mayor, his ring of iron sitting darkly on the runner's polished silver tray. I made my apologies to Braden and hurried off to the gardens. Later that night, Braden sent me his own silver ring and a card saying, After supper, your rooms. I wrote, Delighted, on the card and sent it back. When he arrived, I offered to return his ring. He politely declined, and it joined the rest in the bowl by my door. It sat there for everyone to see, bright silver glittering among the handful of iron. Chapter 58. Courting. The mayor had not called on me for 2 days. I was trapped in my rooms and near mad with boredom and irritation. Worst was the fact that I didn't know why the mayor wasn't calling on me. Was he busy? Had I offended him? I thought of sending him a card along with the gold ring Braden had given me. But if Alvaron were testing my patience, that could be a grave mistake. But I was impatient. I had come here to gain a patron, or at least some assistance in my pursuit of the Emir. So far, all I had to show for my time in the mayor's service was a profoundly flattened ass. If it hadn't been for Braden, I swear I would have gone frothing mad. Worse, my loot and Denna's lovely case were only 2 days away from becoming someone else's property. I had hoped by this point to have gained enough of the mayor's favor that I could ask him for the money I needed to get it out of pawn. I'd wanted him to be indebted to me, not the other way around. Once you owe something to a member of the nobility, it is notoriously difficult to work your way free of their debt. But if Alvaran's lack of summons was any indication, I seemed to be far from his good graces. I racked my memory, trying to think of what I might have said during our last conversation that could have offended him. I'd pulled the card from the drawer and was trying to think of a politic way of asking the mayor for money when a knock came at the door. Thinking it was my lunch come early, I called for the boy to leave it on the table. There was a significant pause that roused me from my reverie. I hurried to the door and was startled to see the mayor's manservant, Stapes, standing outside. Alvaran's summons had always been delivered by Runner before.
"The mayor would like to see you," he said.
I noticed the manservant looked worn around the edges. His eyes were weary, as if he hadn't been sleeping enough. "In the garden?"
"In his rooms," Stapes said. "I will take you there."
If the gossiping courtiers were to be believed, Alvaran rarely received visitors in his rooms. As I fell into step behind Stapes, I couldn't help but feel relief. Anything was better than waiting. Alvaran was propped upright in his great feather bed. He seemed paler and thinner than when I'd seen him last. His eyes were still clear and sharp, but today they held something else, some hard emotion. He gestured to a nearby chair.
"Quoth, come in, sit down."
His voice was weaker too, but it still carried the weight of command. I sat at his bedside, sensing the time was not appropriate for thanking him for the privilege.
"Do you know how old I am, Quoth?"
he said without preamble.
"No, Your Grace." "What would your guess be? How old do I seem?"
I caught the hard emotion in his eyes again. Anger. A slow, smoldering anger, like hot coals beneath a thin layer of ash. My mind raced, trying to decide what the best answer might be. I didn't want to risk giving offense, but flattery irritated the mayor unless it was done with consummate subtlety and skill. My last resort, then. Honesty. 51, Your Grace. Perhaps 52. He nodded slowly, his anger seeming to fade like thunder in the distance.
"Never ask a young man your age. I am 40, with a birthday next span. You're right, though. I look 50 years if I look a day. Some might even say you are being generous."
His hands smoothed the bedcovers absently.
"It's a terrible thing growing old before your time."
He stiffened in pain, grimacing. After a moment, it passed, and he drew a deep breath. A faint sheen of sweat covered his face.
"I don't know how long I'll be able to speak with you. I don't seem to be doing very well today."
I stood. "Should I fetch Codicus, Your Grace?"
"No,"
he spat.
"Sit down."
I did.
"This damnable sickness has crept on me this last month, adding years and making me feel them. I have spent my life tending to my lands, but I have been lax in one regard. I have no family, no heir."
"Do you mean to take a wife, Your Grace?" He sagged against his pillows.
"The rumor has finally gotten around, has it?"
"No, Your Grace. I guessed it from what you've said in some of our conversations." He gave me a penetrating look.
"Truthfully? A guess and not from a rumor?"
"Truthfully, Your Grace. There are rumors, a whole courtload, if you'll excuse the expression."
"Courtload. That's good."
He smiled a thin whisper of a smile. "But most of it concerns some mysterious visitor from the west." I performed a small seated bow. "There's nothing of marriage. Everyone sees you as the world's first bachelor."
"Ah," he said, his face showing his relief. "That used to be the case. My father tried to marry me off when I was younger. I was rather strong-headed about not taking a wife at the time. That's another problem with power. If you possess too much, people don't dare point out your mistakes. Power can be a terrible thing." I imagine so, Your Grace.
It takes away your choices, he said. It gives a man opportunities, but at the same time, it takes others away. My situation is difficult, to say the least.
Over the course of my life, I have been hungry too many times to feel much empathy for the nobility. But the mayor looked so pale and weak as he lay there that I felt a flicker of sympathy.
What situation is that, Your Grace?
Alvaron struggled to sit upright against his pillows.
If I am to be married, it must be to someone suitable, someone from a family well-positioned as my own. Not only that, but this cannot be a marriage of alliance. The girl must be young enough to...
He cleared his throat, a papery noise.
Produce an heir. Several, if possible.
He looked up at me.
Do you begin to see my problem?
I nodded slowly.
Just the bare shape of it, Your Grace.
How many such daughters are there?
A bare handful,
Alvaron said, a hint of the old fire coming back to his voice.
But it can't be one of the young women the king has under his control, bargaining chips and treaty sealers. My family has fought to hold our plenary powers since the founding of Vintus. I won't negotiate with that bastard Roderick for a wife. I won't remit a grain of power to him.
How many women are beyond the king's control, Your Grace?
One.
The word fell like a lead weight.
And that is not the worst of it. The woman is perfect in every way. Her family is respectable. She is educated, young, beautiful.
The last word seemed to come hard to him.
She is pursued by a flock of love-struck courtiers, strong young men with honey on their tongues. They want her for every reason, her name, her land, her wit.
He gave a long pause.
How would she respond to the courting of a sick old man who walks with a stick when he can walk at all?
His mouth twisted, as if the words were bitter.
But surely your position, I began.
He lifted a hand and looked me squarely in the eye.
Would you marry a woman you had bought?
I looked down.
No, Your Grace.
Neither will I. The thought of using my position to persuade this girl to marry me is distasteful.
We were quiet for a moment. Outside the window, I watched two squirrels chase each other around the tall trunk of an ash tree.
Your Grace, if I'm going to help you pay court to this lady...
I felt the heat of the mayor's anger before I turned to see it.
I beg pardon, Your Grace. I've overstepped myself.
Is this another one of your guesses, then?
Yes, Your Grace.
He seemed to struggle with himself for a moment. Then he sighed, and the tension in the room faded.
I must ask your pardon. This clawing pain wears my temper thin, and it is not my custom to discuss personal matters with strangers, much less have them guessed from underneath me. Tell me the rest of what you guess. Be bold if you must.
I breathed a little easier. I guess you want to marry this woman, to suit your duty primarily, but also because you love her.
There was another pause, not so bad as the last one, but tense nonetheless.
Love, he said slowly, is a word the foolish use too often. She is worthy of love, that is certain, and I have a fondness for her.
He looked uncomfortable.
That is all I will say.
He turned to look at me.
Can I count on your discretion?
Of course, Your Grace, but why so secretive about it?
I prefer to move at a time of my own choosing. Rumor forces us to act before we are ready, or ruins a situation before it becomes fully ripe.
I understand. What is the lady's name?
Meluin Lackless,
he said her name carefully. Now, I have discovered for myself that you are charming and well-mannered. What's more, Count Threp assures me you are a great maker and player of songs. These things are exactly what I need. Will you enter my service in this regard?
I hesitated.
How exactly will your grace be putting me to use?
He gave me a skeptical look.
I would think it rather obvious for so excellent a guesser as yourself.
I know you hope to court the lady, Your Grace, but I don't know how. Do you want me to compose a letter or two? Write her songs? Will I climb balconies by moonlight to leave flowers on her windowsill? Dance with her wearing a mask, claiming your name is my own? I gave him a wan smile. I'm not much of a dancer, Your Grace.
Alvaron gave a deep, honest laugh, but even through the joyful sound of it, I could tell the act of laughing pained him.
I was thinking more of the first two,
he admitted, sinking back into the pillows, his eyes heavy.
I nodded. I'll need to know more about her, Your Grace. Trying to court a woman without knowing her would be worse than foolish.
Alvaron nodded tiredly.
Cordicus can lay the groundwork for you. He knows a great deal about the history of the families. Family is the foundation upon which a man stands. You'll need to know where she comes from if you're to court her.
He motioned me closer and held out an iron ring, his arm trembling with the effort of staying in the air.
Show this to Cordicus, and he will know you're on my business.
I took it quickly. Does he know you plan to marry?
No.
Alvaron's eyes flew open.
Do not speak of this to anyone. Invent some reason for your inquiries. Fetch my medicine.
He lay back, closing his eyes. As I left, I heard him speaking faintly.
Sometimes they don't give it knowingly. Sometimes they don't give it willingly. Nevertheless, all power.
Yes, Your Grace, I said, but he had already fallen into a fitful sleep before I left the room.
Chapter 59. Purpose. As I left the mayor's rooms, I considered sending a runner with my card and ring ahead to Cordicus. Then I dismissed the thought. I was on an errand for the mayor. Surely that would excuse a slight breach of etiquette. From the rumor mill, I knew Alvaron's arcanist had been a permanent part of the mayor's court for more than a dozen years, but other than the fact that he lived in one of the estate's southern towers, I had no idea what to expect from the man. I knocked on the thick timbered door.
"Hold on, then,"
the voice came faintly. There was the sound of a bolt being drawn back, and the door opened to reveal a thin man with a long, hawkish nose and curling black hair. He wore a long, dark garment, vaguely reminiscent of a master's robe.
"Yes?"
"I was wondering if I might borrow a moment of your time, sir," I said, my nervousness only half feigned. He looked me over, taking in my fine clothes.
"I don't do love potions. You can find that sort of thing down in Severin Low."
The heavy door began to inch closed.
"Though you'd be better off with a little dancing and some roses, if you ask me."
"I'm here for something else," I said quickly. "Two things, actually. One for the mayor and one for myself." I lifted my hand, revealing the iron ring on my palm. Alvaron's name blazed in bright gold across the face of it. The door stopped closing.
"You'd best come in, then," Cordicus said.
The room looked like a small university contained in a single room. Lit with the familiar red glow of sympathy lamps, there were shelves of books, tables full of twisted glassware, and far in the back, half concealed by the curving wall of the tower, I thought I could see a small furnace or kiln.
"Good God!"
I exclaimed, covering my mouth with one hand.
"Is that a dragon?"
I pointed to a huge stuffed crocodile that hung from one of the ceiling beams. "You have to understand,
Some arcanists are more territorial than sharks, especially those who have managed to acquire luxurious court positions such as this. I had no idea how Cauticus might react to a young arcanist in training arriving in his territory, so I decided it was safer to play the part of a pleasantly dim, non-threatening lordling. Cauticus closed the door behind me, chuckling.
No, it's an alligator. Quite harmless, I assure you.
It gave me a bit of a start, I said. What is the use of such a thing?
Honestly?
He looked up at it.
I don't rightly know. It belonged to the arcanist who lived here before me. It seemed a shame to throw it away. Impressive specimen, don't you think?
I gave it a nervous look.
Quite. What is this business you mentioned?
He gestured to a large, cushioned chair and settled himself into a similar chair across from me.
I'm afraid I only have a few minutes before I will be otherwise occupied. Until then, my time is yours.
He trailed off questioningly. I could see he knew quite well who I was, the mysterious young man the mayor had been meeting with. I guessed he was eager as the rest to find out why I was in Severin.
Quoth, I said. Actually, the mayor's medicine is half my business.
I saw a faint, irritated line appear between his eyebrows and hurried to correct whatever he might be thinking.
I was speaking with the mayor earlier.
I gave the barest pause, as if I was unreasonably proud of this.
And he asked me if I might bring him his medicine after I had finished speaking with you.
The line disappeared.
Certainly, Cauticus said easily. It would save me the trip to his rooms, but what is the matter you wish to speak about?
Well, I leaned forward excitedly. I'm doing research into the histories of the noble families in Vintis. I'm thinking of writing a book, you see.
A genealogy?
I saw boredom begin to fog his eyes.
Oh, no. There are genealogies aplenty. I was thinking of a collection of stories related to the great families.
I was rather proud of this lie. Not only did it explain my curiosity about Meluan's family, it gave a reason for why I was spending so much time with the mayor.
History tends to be rather dry, but everyone enjoys a story.
Cauticus nodded to himself.
Clever idea. That could be an interesting book.
I'll be writing a brief historical preface for each family as an introduction to the stories that follow. The mayor mentioned you were quite the authority on the old families and said he would be pleased if I called on you. The compliment had its desired effect, and Cauticus puffed himself up ever so slightly.
I don't know if I'd consider myself an authority, he said with false modesty.
But I am a bit of a historian.
He raised an eyebrow at me.
You must realize, the families themselves would probably be a superior source of information.
One would think that, I said with a sideways look, but families tend to be reluctant to share their most interesting stories.
Cauticus gave a wide grin. I imagine so.
The grin faded just as quickly.
But I'm certain I don't know any stories of that sort regarding the mayor's family, he said seriously.
Oh, no, no, no. I waved my hands in violent negation. The mayor is a special case. I wouldn't dream. I trailed off, swallowing visibly.
I was hoping you might be able to enlighten me regarding the Lackless family. I'm rather in the dark about them.
Really? He said, surprised. They've fallen from what they once were, but they're a treasure trove of stories.
His eyes focused far away, and he tapped his lips with his fingers distractedly.
How about this? I'll brush up on their history, and you can come back tomorrow for a longer talk. It's nearly time for the mayor's medicine, and it shouldn't be delayed.
He got to his feet and began to roll up his sleeves.
There's one thing I can remember off the top of my head, if you don't mind my rambling while I prepare the mayor's medicine.
I've never seen a potion being made, I said enthusiastically.
If you wouldn't find it too distracting.
Not at all! I could prepare it in my sleep.
He moved behind a work table and lit a pair of blue flame candles. I took care to look suitably impressed, even though I knew they were just for show. Cardicus shook a portion of dried leaf onto a small hand scale and weighed it. "Do you have any trouble accepting rumor into your research?"